search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Broken by Concept, episode 193. Today, we are in for a banger, Nathan. We are talking about Emerald.
I'm excited for this. This is going to be an expository. Is that what we want to call
exploratory?
It?
Yep, expository. Yep. We're going to be exploring Emerald here in all its facets. Now, look, we've been receiving a lot of comments from the community about how we are off the mark. We've lost the plot. We don't know what we're talking about in regards to Emerald. So here, we're just going to go through a few comments.
These are comments based on a short we recently did. Mm. By the way, we have a TikTok, guys, Broken by Concept, link in the description below. The title of this one was, "This Emerald Narrative Needs to Stop." And basically, you started off saying, "I'm pissed off with this narrative that Emerald is Elo Hell, da-di-da-di-da-da-da."
Right.
So these are the comments based on that.
The short response to that.
Yes.
And look, I want to make this very clear. We try to listen to the reasonable comments and the listeners of the BBC, right? We want to start a dialogue. We want to see where we're off. And, you know, it's a two-way conversation a lot of the time. So I hear you guys. We're going to be exploring it and we're going to kind of see where we're at. Why there's a disparity with the way we view Emerald here at the moment. So you got some comments here. One of them says, "I'm glad it pisses you off because this is something you are objectively wrong about. Current Emerald consists of old Gold 2 through to Diamond 4. The skill disparity in any given Emerald game is objectively larger than it should be. You guys rant way too effing much about doing a goddamn iota without doing a goddamn iota of research before talking. You don't even understand why people consider this Elo Hell. You just run off on meaningless tangents. Why don't you take a look at all the things you've been wrong about in the past year alone? Blah, 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 blah." Okay, so this guy's obviously quite emotional about how he thinks that the skill disparity is one of the major aspects as to why Emerald is a tough rank and quote unquote like an Elo Hell. Got another one here saying, "Curtis, have you played in Emerald recently? I think not. It's easy to say that you're doing this and that wrong, but being in such a game is totally different. You might be right that it's not Elo Hell, but that doesn't change the fact that it's worse than other Elos. There are many Smurfs, many new players get here through stupid placements by Riot, a lot of trolls and a lot of bad players. If one such bad player says Emerald is Elo Hell, then you are right in your opinion to shut him up. But that doesn't matter. You aren't here, so you don't know what it's like. I've got a 68% win rate, and it feels to me like the games are a struggle." Okay, a little interesting one. I mean, we can maybe explore that one later. "I love you guys, but you guys are incredibly wrong. Emerald is indeed awful. Yes, you can climb through it, of course, but you are unironically have to solo carry most games. This one here saying, "You guys are usually right about a lot of stuff, but not this. Emerald 4 is the most coin flip Elo in the game at the moment. There are many, many people who can testify to this." We've got other people here saying, "I'm Master 300 LP and still struggling to have a good win rate throughout Emerald." We've got another guy in the comments said, "No, I have an account in Diamond 1, 60% win rate, and also an account in Emerald 4 with a 49% win rate. Playing in Emerald is so frustrating that the quality of your play sinks to the level of others. These guys are drunk, having a solid time in Winner and Diamond, but my other cat's in Emerald? Hard struggling to get good games." Before we move on, as you can see, there's a lot of people pissed off about this.
A different myriad of reasons why they think Emerald is this different beast to climb through. People saying that the Master tier player here, 300 LP, that struggles to have a good win rate through Emerald. People saying the matchmaking is really unbalanced.
Mm. There's a lot of reasons here. And I think you said something off camera that I think is really interesting, just in response to some of these specifically. You said something really interesting about along the lines of, when a Master tier player smurfs in Emerald, what a good win rate means to them is not what kind of struggling or a good win rate means to someone else, right? Someone who's genuinely Emerald, they might think a good win rate might be 60%, right? For a Master tier player smurfing in Emerald, they might be thinking 80%,
yeah,
right? Something like really, really, really high.
You see, there's been a lot of challenge or even content creators recently that have been using that as like a really cool title.
Mm.
You know, I'm stuck in Emerald or struggling through Emerald. Emerald is Elo Hell, but their definition of Eloy Hell is literally like, oh, I can't climb through Emerald with a 90% win rate because I'm smurfing. Versus, and then that gets all the attention of like the, let's say an actual Emerald player. It's like, yeah, I agree with you, you know, but they're not even on the same. That means so much different. Like that word's so dangerous. Like I'm struggling through it, right?
So look, I want to say I hear you. And look, let's explore it. Okay, let's explore it. So, okay, so I want to start by bringing up the percentage. The percentages of the ranks. And I think this is a really great place to start because it gives us great insight into what does it mean to be Emerald? This is what I want to start with this episode. What does it mean to be an Emerald tier player? What is an Emerald tier player? So currently, as it stands, if you are Emerald 4, I believe these were stats taken from the North American Solo Queue Ladder, you are in the top 18%. Emerald 4. Right, so top 18%, that's pretty impressive in any endeavor. Top 18%, you're objectively a good player.
Yeah.
Borderline very good player, right? Would you agree with that
statement? For League, you know a lot, you pretty much would know what pretty much every champ does. You would have a lot of game knowledge, probably pretty good amount of hours. You're starting to get into the more hardcore, like this is where it starts getting challenging, I would say. This sort of 18% sort of mark for the ladder.
I would say a better way to frame that is like, you know, this is where you've now started to enter the territory of being a dedicated League player. Like if you're getting to M4 and above, you're a relatively dedicated player in the game, right? You play a lot of the game or you have played a lot of the game. This is where you start to put quite a bit of hours. You're quite dedicated, right? So top 18%. Now look at how interesting this is. Kind of, you know, attesting to what that other guy in the comments said, look at the disparity of the ranks here. So the difference between Emerald 4 and Emerald 3 is a whopping, what is that? It's about 7%. So you in Emerald 4, you're in the top 18%. If you're Emerald 3, you're in the top 11.7%. Just like that. That's one division. Go even further. Emerald 2, you're now in the top 8%. If you're on Emerald 1, you're in the top 6.6%.
Yeah, so looking at this, the disparity is crazy. Look at the disparity. Emerald 4 to Emerald 1.
And this makes sense in terms of what I see in my coaching. There is a night and day difference between a genuine Emerald 1, Emerald 2 player and a genuine Emerald 4 player.
You can see the skill difference.
You can immediately, yeah. I mean, when I'm coaching, I've coached hundreds and hundreds of players through Emerald 2, Diamond and above, without exaggeration, literally hundreds. It is, you can literally see it in the first 5 to 8 minutes of the gameplay, why they are low Emerald versus why they are high Emerald. And that, and look at that. And the statistics actually, again, suggest that there is a very big difference in the level of play here, right? Just in terms of statistics alone. So I found this very fascinating.
Yeah,
it's
interesting because, so this is why I think the Emerald player base is so, there's a lot of them. It's very loud. But because they're dedicated, there's a lot of them. And when you say you're Emerald, Emerald isn't Emerald. Like again, Emerald 4 and Emerald 1 are like literally, you, like Riot could introduce another rank, I feel like, even in between this. So that's why I think that there's a lot of confusion, anger, frustration, is that even in this, that, you know, I'm Emerald rank, that you're not. There's a massive disparity.
And what this means for a player is that you could be developing a lot of skills. Say you're an Emerald 4 player, you develop a lot of skills, you actually get significantly better, and you're still an Emerald. You might be able to be Emerald 3, Emerald 2. Like, you've gotten a lot better at the game. You've developed, maybe your matchup understanding, your mental stacks developed, you've learned a lot about your lull state usage and win conditions and role assessing your role in the game, but you're still in Emerald. So it feels like you haven't got anywhere. You look objectively from a rank perspective, you've gone from like Emerald 4 to Emerald 2. But again, because it's such a big rank, there is so much work to be done here. Like we said, you are going to probably be in Emerald for quite a long time. It's very rare that someone steamrolls from Emerald 4 to Diamond 4. You should be in there for quite a while. It's a thick rank. It's a very thick rank bracket. So again, going deeper on what does it mean to be an Emerald player? You know, I think that, you know, there's something to be said about, again, you know, we said before about like being dedicated. You know, you've put a lot of time into the game if you're an Emerald player. You care a lot about the game. So what does this often mean? You probably watch a lot of high elo content. Maybe you watch some streamers. I wouldn't say you're usually a casual player, although there probably is casual Emerald players. I would say the overwhelming majority are probably not casual players. And usually if you've got into Emerald, in my experience, talking to Emerald players, they don't stop at Emerald. Like if you've, usually the casual players will get to gold and then stop.
Yeah, so just like that was like for the skin and stuff
yeah,
that you would
have. Yeah, like gold is kind of the cutoff. It's like, okay, if you want to be casually playing League and casually play ranked, you kind of get to gold four and stop. If you're trying to push above plat, even past Emerald, you're not going to stop at Emerald 3 or Emerald 2.
Diamond, you're going to be going for.
You're
going
to go for Diamond. So most Emerald players are relatively ambitious in their ranked goals. They want to push. They watch high elo content. They want to get to Diamond. They want to get to Master Plus. Usually, you've kind of committed at that point. You've stepped over that boundary where it's like, I am now a dedicated player to League, and I have ambitious goals that I want to achieve. Whether or not they admit that or not, their behavior says otherwise.
Yep. I mean, I think my Emerald community and my Soltu, my coaching program, is probably, there's a lot of people that rock up to review sessions.
It's actually
that.
one of my favorite ranks to coach.
Yeah, it is.
Because they're people that actually give a shit.
Yeah.
They rock up, they put in the repetitions, they want to get results. And they come in, like they're actually, Emerald is the rank that, out of all the ranks, that probably get the most value from coaching, by the way, in my opinion.
I would agree. I definitely agree.
It's a really, really good rank to get coaching out of every other rank. So yeah, hopefully now we've started to set the scene a little bit. What does it mean to be an Emerald player, okay? So I think it's very important. Now, I want to now dive a little bit deeper into the underlying skills. So what I've gone ahead and done here is kind of created two kind of aliases. This is just two stereotypes of Emerald players that I see in my program. And maybe after I've kind of go over this, maybe we can go over maybe what you think of stereotypes that you see.
Yep. Obviously, you'll be talking from a mid lane perspective.
Yeah, we're going to be speaking from a lane, mid lane specific perspective, right? Yep. So the first one we have is Emerald tier Bobby. Okay, Emerald tier Bobby. Emerald tier Bobby typically has good champ mastery. You know, they might even have a relatively small champ pool. They might even play in blocks, right? They follow a process. They have solid matchup understanding. But they're very inconsistent with their lull state usage. You know, so they might actually have a pretty good first 8 minutes, potentially. But again, just once they get past 8 to 10 minutes, they will get complacent with lull states. They will be late to plays because they're not reading the map properly. They're taking unnecessary risks because they're not calibrating the map state. So very coin flippy in what fights they should or shouldn't go for. They're not really looking at the game holistically. Therefore, they take sloppy deaths and they don't say no to fights. Okay, so they start off the game relatively well. They get into a pretty good position, but they just make decisions that don't make sense. And the reason the decisions don't make sense, or what if to expand on that more, they don't make sense in the grand scheme of the game in terms of the win condition, their role in the composition, and also just the map state. They don't know what is going on in the map. They're not consistent in regards of calibrating the map. Right, and as we always say on the BBC, and one of our mantras is the more information you can gather, the more information you're actually processing, the better quality your decisions are going to be. And their decision making is so capped or limited because they struggle, Emerald Bobby, you know, in this case, Bobby struggles to gather information. So usually a gathering information problem.
As a jungler, I'll definitely categorize. Yep, Bobby as a jungler is someone that is missing a lot of pieces of the puzzle information. But I would say more so early game specifically, like, does an Emerald jungler know what's happening in all three lanes at any given moment in the early game as they're clearing? Never seen that before.
Yep.
Even low diamond sort of stuff really struggles with that. So that's what I would say for that one. And then, mid game. It's interesting. You said that they don't really even, they're not even at the level of champ mastery yet of knowing what they want, their role, as well as they don't know what everyone else wants.
I would give, it depends on the Emerald player, but I would give most of my Emerald players the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to say most of my Emerald players do have champ mastery.
Yeah, that's what I would say. So I'd say they have a good idea of what they want. Whether they can actually execute it is different.
It's a different story.
Yeah, so they're aware of it. But when I am in a review, when I'm talking with an Emerald player and I'm saying, okay, I mean, you know what you want? It's like, yeah, okay. He's like, ah, damn, I messed that up. But then when I said, what's the map state? Where's your pressure point right now? No clue.
No idea.
So a little bit of knows what they want, struggles to execute it consistently. But in terms of what's going on, especially in mid game, like side lane, what's going on side lanes?
Zero.
Very, idea. Very poor.
Very poor.
In terms of understanding of what their teammates want specifically. That's and right. What the enemy teams are going to be doing.
So I've got another stereotype here, Emerald Steve. All right. So again, pretty solid champ mastery, decent champ mastery. But then they have inconsistent matchup understanding, inconsistent fundamentals, but they have a very good mid game and good game sense. So this is typically the long-term player. So I actually work with a lot of players that are long-term League players. They've played since maybe season 3, season 4, season 5, maybe even season 5, 6. And typically what they have is that they purely rely on intuition. So they're Emerald because of their great game sense and mid-game. So they actually know how to scrap. They know how to skirmish. They know how to kind of like brute force their way through scrappy games. But their early game is a complete flip. They will die to ganks. Their warding is super inconsistent. Their resets make no sense. Their matchup understanding is a complete flip as well. They don't put any emphasis on the early game. And the reason they don't is because they make up for it in the mid game. And this is the core flaw in their play, is that if they actually created a consistent first 8 minutes, they would be way higher, you know, probably even going from Emerald 4 to Emerald 2, Emerald 1. And then I don't know if that would take them to Diamond 4. But a lot of the time, I see these sorts of Emerald players, just very inconsistent first 8 minutes. And then I think another thing you see with these sorts of players as well is that they play a matchup well once, but they don't even understand why. So I'm like, okay, what are you doing with the wave here? And they're like, I don't remember. I don't really think about it. They genuinely don't know. Yeah. Like, they don't have intention with what they're doing with the wave. They don't have intention with when they want to base. They don't have intention with basically anything. It's all free flow. And you can get away with that sometimes with just good quality skirmishing or just the way the game pans out. But that lack of consistency really, really, really hurts them. And that's going to be one of the themes you see with Emerald players holistically, is a lack of consistency. And this is a theme that I want to be touching on a lot throughout this video. So these are just two stereotypes that I've observed. There's many more, but this is just the kind of the two core ones that I've noticed.
Out of Emerald Bobby and Emerald Steve, you have more Bobbies?
Way more Bobbies.
Bobby, I was going to say.
Yes.
My Steve wouldn't exactly look like that. It would be more so, like, I think there's just no jungler in general, Emerald. Like a mid-game understanding is a mid-game understanding. Right. It's just like, I'm just going to fight around this objective. Side lanes, again, not in their thing. But, like, Emerald Steve for me will be like, they're pretty good at fighting, skirmishing.
Yep.
They're probably way above their level in terms of fighting. But in terms of early game consistency, all that sort of stuff. But that's much rarer. Again, I have much more Bobbies of just, like, you know, sort of just more average across the board.
Totally agree.
And then, yeah.
Totally agree. So, you know, so what would you say in your experience, Nathan, are the skills that Emerald players are typically missing? Right. Well, let's just go through an average Emerald week in your program.
So again, talking from a jungle perspective.
Yeah, jungle's perspective.
Very slow to read wave states. They actually can see it in a review, but slow, and not going to be able to do it in the real time of a game consistently.
I just want to just point a tangent on that. I totally agree. They can understand it in the review. When I'm there with them in the review, they'll say, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." But in the game, they're not processing.
And that's part of why they could never even get to the part of understanding what's happening to all three layers, because they're still struggling to figure out what's going on in top and mid, let alone bot, when they're pathing towards top. You know, other skills, very bad at give in things as a jungler.
Same
right?
as saying no. Same as saying no
to the play, right?
Yeah.
Again, I think that a lot of this, you know, it's going to be more prevalent across all ELOs, but, you know, this is definitely hurting their games quite a bit. Like, an Emerald jungler is very, very good at ruining a game of League of Legends. And the thing about this, when I watch mid lane is as well compensated for junglers. I literally very say common. In the review a lot of the time, I was like, oh, I wish that Ahri had more confidence here to not go to your dumb play, push out the waves, and then, you know, be way stronger. Like, we actually will have an example of this sort of stuff. So I love looking at how my junglers are affecting the map. It helps me become a better coach and just understanding how to teach the game. And again, really emphasizing, put yourself in the shoes of your laners.
Yeah, totally. And
I can't do that at all.
And I think what you said earlier on about the whole, like, they can know what their champ wants to do, but their ability to execute that consistently is a huge problem. But again, similar to what you said, it's...
They get distracted. They're very good at getting distracted easily.
They don't play with conviction in accordance to what their champion wants to do, totally. And again, I think for me, you know, tying back to the whole thing, that the sheer lack of gathering information, you know, just lull state after lull state. Just, I'm like, well, where is that? Just don't know where people are, why they're doing what they're doing. There's no intent, just lack of intention, straight up lack of intention. I'm like, okay, I understand that we might know what to do, but at least make a decision. It can be wrong. Just make a decision. And that is something I see a lot as well. Just not playing with intention.
That makes me now think with, I feel like there's another tier. You have Steve, Bobby. I think there's like a Tim or something, where the players that actually, once you tell them, this actually goes around the head of a lot of League players, like, playing low intensity and high intensity, just doing that three-block process, stuff like that, I have, like, again, probably, like, you know, 10 or 20% of people that, like, have been around a long time. They know a good, they've actually been a high rank in the past. You tell them, like, are you actually focused here? And then they just start focusing and then they just rocket to diamond. Climb, like, yeah. That's probably another tier
of category. But I would actually, to get more specific, I've had a lot of Emerald players climb to diamond through just telling them to overemphasize, again, on gathering information. Not even processing information. Mm. We're talking pure gathering. Just
count to 10. It's like an intensity thing.
It's intensity. Exact same thing. Just count to 10. Like, find all the people. Think about the next, when's the next objective up?
Let's wake up.
Wake up. And then they can actually express what they know about the game.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is crazy.
They have a good idea.
And that's not everyone.
Yeah.
That is a category of...
That's a separate category.
That's a stereotype of some level, category. Yeah. So, you know, kind of, I want to go a bit further about talking about some more major challenges that I think Emerald players face in my experiences. I think the first one is that, like, just wrapping your head around the premise of consistency. Now, look, I think this is prevalent in all ranks, right? Diamond, Master,
of course, every rank. Consistency is the game.
Consistency is the
game. Especially when you're thinking about the rank ladder approaching, you know, understand you're going to lose a lot of games, but playing the casino odds, you know, I hate when using the word casino because it sounds like we're gambling, but, like, you know, playing the odds long term, the poker hands, being consistent.
100%. And I think that just, I've really struggled with a lot of my Emerald clients to get the head around that idea of, like, okay, it is about what happens in this game, but it's also about, like, what's going to happen in the majority of your games here. And that's where, that again, I think a lot of Emerald players get very emotional. And I think why I struggle with it with Emerald players, because they're very emotional. They tend to be very
emotional. Again, because they have stakes, they're invested, groups.
They're frustrated.
So it's very easy to get...
And I empathize. I totally understand.
This is a league journey in general, but, like, you could feel pretty good. Like, oh, like, I'm actually comfortably climbing out of Emerald. And then you have those games where it's like, you know, why is it so hard, or why am I screwing up? And then they start emotional, and then they tilt, and then they're back down, and then they're constantly in that cycle of, like, I'm actually improving, getting good, and then I'm letting in the emotions because I'm so invested and dedicated to the game.
Again, I actually want to talk about another stereotype now that you mention it, is I do feel like there is a lot of Emerald players that they digest a lot of high-low content and educational content, and they're good enough at the game to actually understand it. So then when they make mistakes, they're so hard on themselves. So it's like they are aware of how suboptimal they are playing, such that they tilt out of their mind. You know, so with like gold players and a lot of the lower elo brackets, silvers and stuff, they just don't know what they don't know. Like, they're not even aware of how inefficient they're being, or how bad a death is, or whatever. But in Emerald players, not all of them, again, this is a subcategory, they are aware, and they get very angry at themselves when they make mistakes. And it's almost like they're too hard on themselves, and they get so worked up, so pissed off at mistakes, because they just know they're not as good as in their mind that they could be. You know, because again, they're at that stage of their journey where they do know that there are high levels of play. They're just not able to execute it, and they may not fully understand why. Mm. But I think that is a contributing factor to maybe the emotional element of a lot of Emerald players.
That's an interesting one, because in my reviews, I don't really get to that part. I won't really talk. Like, have you spoken to people message you, like, Emerald players? Is that something you've
come across? What I do in all my sessions. I had an Emerald session this week, because it's Emerald week, with an Emerald player who we literally just went into stage four stuff for the past 10 minutes of the session.
Yeah.
So I go over a lot of stage four stuff.
Because I have a couple of people that I think would fit that category, but I don't know that for sure.
Right.
But yeah,
I definitely get into that. Yeah, I speak to them. I deal with these mental booms every week. I mean, people in the MLA can attest to that. So that's definitely, I know that exists for a fact. I had that literally one client off of the top of my head this week had that exact problem. So just moving into some of these other challenges, you know, like we said here, getting uncomfortable with making calls and saying no, like you said. Developing a bigger picture view, taking responsibility for things around you. That's what we're going to get into. I think this one's better shown through clips, so we'll get into clips in a second.
Going back to the getting uncomfortable with making calls, saying no, the narrative there is that they don't want to feel accountable for the call. They're very scared of getting flamed, and everyone's probably playing with chat with Emerald. No one's going to mute all because big egos, as people like to say and stuff. So, you know, the only way I always say it to learn the game quickly is make the calls, lose the game for your team, move on to the next game. But that's very hard to think long-term and suffer the consequences of the chat.
100%. And this is, you know, my model, and just a really simplified, obviously models aren't perfect, but a simplified model of the league journey is legit this. Every single rank you go up, it becomes less and less and less about you. In platinum, or say gold, it's about your 1v1, learning your matchups in the 1v1. Platinum is about the 2v2. Emerald is now thinking, okay, yeah, the 2v2 is important, but how is these decisions also impacting win conditions a little bit more and the map a little bit more? Diamond, way more now about the big picture of the game. Master Plus is now 100% big picture
League
thinking.
Of Legends, playing League of Legends.
Win conditions to the most extreme.
And again, that's not to say that suddenly you're not competent in your own lane.
That's a given.
That you got
exactly.
to that
stage. Yeah. In gold, we don't really need to go super sophisticated on advanced win conditions. Let's just do your job individually. And then again, so as you're climbing Platinum Emerald, you're just thinking bigger picture. And that's uncomfortable because you're not in your comfort zone anymore. It's not just about me and me winning my lane and taking good trades or me and my jungler. It's the bigger picture. And that's hard. It is very difficult. There's a lot of information to look at. Yeah, you don't even know where to start. Yeah. There's not a lot of knowledge that needs to be built up over time. And that's, again, a tough pill to swallow for people that they don't really want to view it.
And building the pattern recognition, the sequences, getting yes. constant reps of the sequences of like mid-game scenarios, early game scenarios. So then you don't have to think about it in game, bam, the muscle memory is there.
And you know, the thing that, look, I understand, I'm here to say, this is not about us, we're on this pedestal over here telling everyone that they're wrong about Emerald. I don't want this video to be like that. We're here to help. Ultimately, what this podcast is for is helping people on their journey and getting them to view the game through a different lens, or maybe get them to think about something in a different way. So I can totally understand, you know, League's an emotional game. We say that all the time. If there are ML players right now that are angry about the type of YouTube comment about how fucking delusional we are, I can understand why you feel that way. And I look, if I were in your shoes, I'd probably say the same thing, right? But again, it can be very difficult to see the consequences of your actions in game because you simply don't have the knowledge of the game yet, big picture, to see how your decisions are impacting the game. And this is what I want to get into in a second with the clips, but I'm just here to say that I don't want this to be a very combative episode where it's like, we're right, you're wrong. No, I hear you. We hear you. We understand why you feel that way. We're just here to help, and let's get aligned here. Mm. Right? I felt like it's important to talk about
this. I guess when I think about this podcast and when we get these type of comments, it's great to see, like, we get a lot of views now. Mm. You know, these shorts, you know, they're popping off. People see them. People are very passionate. They want to get their opinion out. There's lots of passionate people out there.
We love that.
That's awesome.
Enthusiasm.
And if we guide them or get them more understanding and push them in the right direction, get the entire player base understanding how League works, what a realistic journey looks like, win rates, all that sort of stuff, League is going to be an awesome game. It's awesome. You know,
it's an amazing game.
If we can get to that stage.
We're trying.
But we've got a lot of work to do, clearly, you know. And it's fun. That's the fun part of what we do.
And so what I want to do is I want to go ahead and get into some clips here. We're going to explore some clips. So what I've done is just literally, these are just recent Emerald coaching sessions that I've had in the past week that just show just really classic Emerald mistakes that, and this is now, I want you guys, the people that are pissed at us, to now empathize with us. We're the coaches, we know, this is literally our full-time job, just to put that in perspective. This is all we do.
For years,
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of clients. We see the same problems. I want to just pick a handful of just common trends and just to kind of set the scene of why the conversation should be more about the details and why Emerald is not some, there is no grand conspiracy here. There's just mistakes, problems we have to solve, okay?
And we'll give you some tools.
Yeah, hopefully some tips and tools and things to latch on to, yeah? So this first one is just a very classic, nothing fancy scenario where it was an Emerald 1 Cassio. Now, what you've got to kind of set the scene, you're first seeing a Cassio versus Katarina, and this Cassio had the ability to pull the wave and freeze. But something you've got to understand is that you never want to freeze into a post-6 Katarina. That's not what you're doing to Katarina.
They're roaming.
Why? Yeah. Because big picture, Katarina's just going to leave and roam, especially when your jungler is looking to gank bot. So what should have happened in the lull state here, again, one of the themes is lull state, is you realize, you know what? My jungler's on bot side. Bot lane's pushed up. Okay, this is not a good time for me to freeze because what's going to happen if I freeze? Katarina's going to roam. They're probably going to die my bot side. My bot side's heavy trading low. Zach's on bot side. Oh, if I freeze here, I'm going to be leaving my team very, very vulnerable. So we freeze here. You know, we might take a good trade or two. But then look at this in a second. Fast forwarding here. Katarina's going to get Pryor off the wave. Zach goes for a bot gank. And in an alternate reality, Katarina would have ditched this wave, gone bot, and got a double kill or triple kill. Now, in this specific game, the Katarina didn't. We got away with it. The stars aligned. This Katarina's blind, whatever you want to say. But if we play the odds, your team loses the game. Just like that. Boom. Game's over. Just like that.
Hmm.
And we just got lucky.
Hmm.
We just completely lucked out. This is a classic Emerald mistake where the caster was only thinking about the 1v1 and not thinking about the big picture.
Great. That's a really good one. Yep.
And now this can manifest in so many different ways, whether it's they're thinking about only their reset and not thinking about what their jungler is doing on a neutral objective, whether they're freezing the wave when their jungler is invading, whether they're trying to hard shove wave and dive bot when their jungler is making a play topside. The list goes on. You see this time and time and time again because they're not thinking about their jungler and what their jungler is doing.
It's still a very 1v1 game in their mind. It's like, freeze, good, yes.
Yep, exactly. So we're going to be moving on to the next clip here. This one was a Karthus mid that I was taking a look at a review of. And just looking at his composition, this Karthus was paired with like an Ashe and a Senna. You know, and so this Karthus shouldn't be flashing in on the back line. You want to be kind of peeling back, relaxing, playing with your Senna and your Ashe here. So this is an example of what I see a lot of people not knowing their role. And what are they paired with based off the chance they're paired? Look at this Karthus flashing into the back line. You know, so this, to me, when I look at this, obviously you can look at it from a mechanical perspective, but the bigger picture problem is that this Karthus didn't know how to play with this specific composition. So when you're playing champions and when you're looking at your team fighting, in order to have consistent team fighting, you got to already prime your mental sack in the lull states. What's my job here? What's my role? How do I need to fight with, given my composition and their composition? Why are we flashing on the backline Lux with an Ashe Senna on our team?
Again, it's I guess they view champs, Emerald players view champs very binary. This works in a lot of situations, but they're not getting specific.
They don't get specific.
Things. So it's like they've got the pattern recognition. It's like, oh, I do this as Karthus. I flash and die and he's good as Karthus if your team has follow up.
Yeah.
But it's too binary way of viewing the champion. It's not how League works.
No. And when you don't understand the why, nothing becomes replicable. And that's it. That's really what we see time and time again. Moving on to another one. I mean, just a really simple one. This was just a example of a client in Emerald who he's actually low Emerald, like borderline plat one low Emerald. You can tell because the low Emerald players tend to maybe even struggle with the mechanical aspect of the game. And so in this lane phase, he just gets hit by like every Lux E. You know, and this is a kind of like a subcategory of Emerald players where mechanically they're just not up to par. And they just don't, and look at this, it's every E just getting nailed. And look, we're already level one. We got hit by every E and we're on, a quarter HP or... And
the wave's in a terrible state for jungle gank as well.
It's just, and this is what I would kind of even borderline, you know, group up with like inconsistent early game fundamentals. You know what I was talking about with that, was it Steve or one of them where, you know, their early game was just not replicable in any way, shape or form, but they make up for it with a good mid game. This is kind of what it looks like. Very inconsistent laning, poor warding and leaning, dying to ganks, don't know what they're doing with the wave and getting hit by skill shots. Like this is an example of what that may look like. And so I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. It's not always big picture thinking. You can actually just get Emerald players that are not focusing on their early game.
Yep.
Okay, so moving on to another one here. This is where the El Clasico one starts. This is not calibrating the map state. So here, this is the juicy stuff. This is typically what you see. This is actually someone who recently promoted to Diamond 4, by the way. So this is someone that still is, they've made up for it. I know this player, I've worked with him a shit ton. He's from Iris, actually. And this is the sort of player that makes up for their like inconsistent map state calibration, which is good fighting, good scrapping. But this is, again, a class. He was Emerald for a long time. So basically, what you see here is that I think the enemy Katarina went for a roam topside. We freeze him right now. The Katarina's walking back over the scuttle back onto mid. But in reality, if we take a look at the map state, we have no idea where the enemy jungler is, and our jungler is just clearing camps. So this is not our time to make a play onto the Katarina because we don't know where their jungler is, we don't have flash, and our jungler isn't in position to capitalize. So based off the map state, we're not in a position to make a proactive play on the enemy right now. So as a result, this Echo goes up, only thinks it's the Katarina, didn't think about any jungle location, and Viego comes through, and then boom, we have to burn our ultimate.
Yep.
And so that's a classic example.
It's just coin flip trade.
So there's a very, this is what I say.
Yeah.
There's a very big difference between a player actively gathering all that information, being like, okay, my Kha'Zix is there. Okay, I don't know where their jungler is, but you know what? I think I can 1v2. I think I can get out without using anything. Versus making this decision with no idea about the map state, not thinking about their jungler's location, not thinking about, you know what I mean? Not thinking about the enemy jungler's location, but they do it anyway.
Yeah, it's conscious or not. It's like intentional.
One is intentional. Yeah. They've gathered all the information, processed it, come to this conclusion versus no idea, do it anyway.
And that's the good thing that when we talk with our clients in our coaching, we ask, like, what were you thinking about this moment? And they make the play and then you begin, they're not thinking about anything. So we know that they're not thinking about anything.
They're not thinking. Yeah. Exactly.
Because this mistake could look like that on different levels. It's like, oh, yes. I'll take that 1v1. Yep. And like, I don't care. I'm going to flip it if Viego's there. That's fine.
That's fine.
Completely
on
fine.
On that decision, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. But if you've got no idea, then that's again, the skills lacking of an Emerald player.
This is the El Clasico Emerald mistake.
Yep.
If you can just slap on an Emerald mistake, this is it.
This is
what it looks like.
Emerald is a mid laner.
I would say Emerald in all roles.
I see.
This is what makes an Emerald player, in my opinion. Just a lack of gathering information, a lack of intention.
Yeah, I mean, for a jungler, I'll definitely see junglers invade with, like, no priority. Or they're not seeing that their lane is about to get a freeze. So it's a red light, give grubs, go back to the other side.
And again, you play out this exact situation 100 times. Well, who knows? Maybe a support tier this time, or their jungler's stronger, or you don't have ultimate, or who knows? It's just a flip. There's no intention. Or lack the consistency. That's why the consistency is not there. That's why they are in Emerald. Moving on. Another one. Not anticipating things. This is a classic example of just not anticipating stuff that like a higher level player would anticipate. So, for example, here, what you've got is just to set the scene is that we were versing an Annie mid. So I was going back even further. Sorry. And the Annie mid had tempo onto us because we made a bot play, right? And so what happens is that we get shoved in by this Annie. We try to thin out the way, try to do the best we can. And this Annie then disappears, moves onto top center and disappears. Now, Nathan, if you see someone move into vision and you're just CSing here, what would you start to do now?
Well, you got to start letting your team aware. Like, you got to ping. Like, I'll be looking at top wave as well. Is that diveable? Is he going to get dived by Annie?
Yeah. You're trying to anticipate, well, what's that Annie doing? Can anything happen topside?
Maybe there's nothing, but you have to get that information. You have to know. Again,
you have to have some sort of a hypothesis, right? Now, this Galio literally just ping question mark mid, which has no idea where Annie went, has no clue.
And he has no idea what she could be possibly doing.
Not even a hypothesis about what Annie could be doing. Yeah. And then look at this. It's the most telegraphed top dive possible with a huge stacked wave. And like, oh, what? Annie's diving top, huh? What?
Yeah, this is great. Fantastic.
Just zero anticipation. And then look at this, because we're late and we're not in position. Garen dies, loses like three waves. We're late to ult. Lilia dies as
well. Don't tell me they both survive, yeah.
And then he dies.
End of review.
Yeah. This is why they're Emerald. Again, I'm not shitting on this client. Mm. Obviously, there's things to work on here. But again, I'm not scratching my head and being like, it's the trolls, it's the matchmaking, it's the Riot trying to hold me down. No, there are very basic... This is what I mean a basic... It's not basic in the idea that it's easy to do, but it's basic in the concept. It's basic in terms of there is a mistake. These are things that we can control in our journey. And
it's important to note as well, because people will be like, oh, you know, I could do this for anyone's gameplay in, like, you know, even Diamond. Like, I'm sure that people make this mistake. But
100%.
But the thing is, guys, I mean, you basically have to trust us. It's the consistency we see this across our Emerald clients in our reviews. And, you know, again, we're full-time coaches for years. These are trends. And if there's trends in a certain rank, that means that there actually is skill to it. And that the skill, the ladder makes perfect sense.
I want to literally spell it out. And I apologize to the audience. I get really worked up. This is like this is our passion, right? Yeah. This is what we do for a living. I get really excited about this. Yeah. But I say this because people ask me all the time, what is it? What is it? Like, what makes a challenger player a challenger? A challenger player literally, because I've been at my highest level of play, I know exactly what it feels like. They anticipate every single thing.
Yeah.
There is not a single moment in the game when you're playing at your absolute peak League of Legends, Nathan, or I'm playing in my peak League of Legends, you just know that's going to happen. Yep, already. You already see things 10, 20, 30 seconds in advance. Everything is anticipated. You're not reacting to a single thing. You are dictating the entire game.
And then it's just a matter of like prioritization. And then you'll stuff up. It's like, okay, I knew the information. I went for this play, but maybe it didn't make sense. Or I gave this opportunity to the enemy. Curtis, you're saying that in terms of a challenger perspective in a fast-paced game where people can also mind game you a little
That's where mind games come into play.
If we're smurfing in Emerald, it's God mode, basically.
It's God mode. So let's use this example then.
Because we know everything I know exactly what a player is going to do before they do it, 30 seconds. It's very telegraphed. Again, Emerald game is very easy because it's much of a slower paced game.
So then from a challenger's perspective, in this game, this is me. I play Galio, right? I would consider I'm a pretty bloody good Galio, and it sounds like egotistical, but again...
You have been challenged with Galio many seasons, Curtis.
He's a long-term Galio player. So as soon as Annie gets prior onto me here, I would instantaneously be now thinking, okay, I would really be thinking, okay, my jungler's dead, so my jungler's not going to get killed on the topside camps. Their jungler showed on bot side before, so their jungler, they're not going to be doing grubs. So the only thing that they could maybe do, and he could maybe doing is, okay, maybe add something, a top play. So I'd be panning my camera here, looking at top. I'd be danger ping top already that Annie was moving topside to give the Garen heads up. And then based off what I see on topside, I would then decide, okay, do I need to ditch this next wave because of the timing to be there to defend the Garen? Or based off my pings, maybe has Garen done something to prevent himself from getting dove? Maybe I can shove and then maybe can I make a counterplay? You know what I mean? I would already be thinking, what's next?
And this is the factors. There's so many
so
factors.
So quickly though. Quickly as hell. Very quick. Like 2 seconds, 3 seconds. I'd process all that, come to a conclusion. And I would even know, I'd be able to pan my camera and instantly know if that's diveable. So I then, if I could say that's not diveable, I could shove mid, reset, get tempo, make another play later and be thinking about how I'm going to use my tempo. Yeah. Or I just get counter gank it, double kill them, game's over anyway.
Or, you know, this is how quickly things can change in information. If Garen was 10% HP, not 80% HP when they're setting up this dive,
I wouldn't even go.
Then you don't even go. And you start peeing your jungle, let's trade.
Yep.
We'd have to give him a play
outside of the map.
So, you know, and that's one player. You could be controlling your jungler and your bot lane could start setting up. The amount of impact you can have in this scenario is insane for one player.
The game can literally go from an auto win to an auto loss just off one play. Yep. Just like this.
Purely based on even, we were just talking about Garen's HP. The information's one thing, but now we're getting more into the details, like his HP difference, huge.
100%. And so what a challenger player is good at is gathering and processing and then prioritizing really quickly in real time. Boom, 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 boom. And knowing what to do based off all the comps. Okay, we'll get even more detail. Okay, how important is it for me to defend my Garen? You know, if this were a high-level game, I'd think, okay, well, maybe my bot side's losing 2v2. Garen's the only win condition. Maybe it's worth me...
I have to send it.
Maybe I have to sack two waves here to defend my top because he's the only win con, and if he dies, we have no win con. That's where I'm... That's the level. It's like, that's the levels, you know, you can reach. But, you know, we're literally talking... We're not even aware of what our counterpart is doing. We're not even pinging our roam. We're not even panning our camera. Like, that's... It makes sense why there's that giant skill disparity. That's it. That is it. And the consistency of it. You know, I like to view things at the moment. This is my little meta of coaching at the moment, viewing everything on a scale, right? An Emerald player, in terms of their LoL state usage, in terms of the consistency of actually gathering the information, might be like a four out of 10, right? 4 times out of 10, 40% of the time they're going to use a LoL state, right? Then, whereas a Diamond 2 player might be 7 times out of 10. A master tier player might be 8 times out of 9 times out of 10. Challenger, it's like 10 out of 10. You know, again, depending on the situation, depending on that. I'm just using generalities here. But you view it on a scale. It's not black and white because people say, oh, I've done that. I did that this game. I did use my LoL states. But okay, that's one game. Did you do that on every deployment? Do you do that every game of every block of every week of every month? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Again, that's why it's just the human mind could just trick you and the way, you know, you can get better and worse. Like, you can do something that looks awesome in that one moment, or you have that game, you go 15-0, you think you're the best player, but again, consistency might just be one of those easier games.
100%. And then even just again, just to really top it off with another mid example, he's a classic example of, again, poor reading of the map. So this Ahri has complete tempo over the counterpart here. Their jungler Rek'Sai is looking for a bot gank, right? All we have to do is realize that Rek'Sai is going for a gank, get the plate and go. Why are we not complimenting our Rek'Sai going for a gank? We're not even panning our camera. So what I said was, what you should have done is get the plate and then start clicking down, pan your camera and assess how they're reacting to that information. Is Nautilus still posturing up aggressively or not? And then if Nautilus is, then it's fine. You can just either reset, you know, tempo reset, whatever, or you can commit based off what you see. But there's not even a single ounce of even, I don't even think awareness of his jungler's location, but also what the jungler's doing and also how they're posturing. I'm like, you could have actually determined based off a single camera panning and an assessment of the way the Nautilus is posturing, whether or not that was a high percentage or low percentage roam. But again, no camera panning.
It's just laser focus on tower. I see tower, I hit. That's just as simple as it is.
Yep. And this is Emerald 2. This is just recent week. This is the most recent. These are just very recent VODs, guys.
All right, I got to show you some from the jungle perspective here, Curtis. Yep. This is Emerald 1, I believe.
Okay.
Kha'Zix here. I want you to look at the game from the Ahri's perspective as well here. So Ahri has no ults. We're playing an assassin, Kha'Zix. Mm-hmm. Assassin loves...
Fair, really fair.
We had an episode before talking about the assassin mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Being around mid, not a good idea. So let's look at the Kha'Zix and the Ahri. Again, Ahri has no ult right here. Also, look at the map status top as well. So this is what I would call a red light, massive red light. The enemy, there's nothing to do here until your side lane is fix the waves. That's it. So look at what Kha'Zix does here. We're using our ults. We're fighting. We're baiting our team. Look what Ahri does here now, Curse. Again, because there's no confidence in Emerald players, right? So what Ahri should do right now is just go bot. Like, okay, they're all dead. Couldn't care less about my jungle. Push bot. How am I going to contribute to the fight? I don't have ult. So, you know, I don't want to just point this from the Kha'Zix perspective. It's everyone's stuffing up. It's the Jhin and the Renata. No one knows that it's a red light.
No one knows what they're doing.
Yone's not pinging anything. It's everyone. It's like, you know, the Q, the clown. He's like, everyone is no
anyone,
one knows what's going on.
Anyone could have called this off.
Yeah.
Anyone.
That's right.
Jhin, support, jungler, Ahri. Even Ahri.
Yeah.
In Ahri and base, if I was in this game, I'd be pinging give drag. Back. Get the hell out of here. I don't have ult. We're not contesting this drag. Top has no move. I'm in Narnia. Just give. No big deal.
And again, I just want to just show you guys the outcome of this, by the way.
Oh, God.
It's so great. Ahri's come off base. No ult. Insta-dies at nothing. So good.
End of review.
I see this every day. Because junglers are very good at forcing. They're the ones that force the mid players, right? Like, as a mid laner or a top laner, right? You're the one side lane and you're frustrated that your jungler's going for plays. I coach the junglers that are forcing the mid plays when you want to go for side lanes. Look at that. Everyone's dead. Lose tower, lose
Jhin,
dragon.
Jhin, Raging is happy to have played games. Let's just FF and move on. Look at that. Yeah. Jhin. It's the team's fault.
No one's got any idea what's going on.
No one's taking accountability. No one's taking responsibility.
And there's so many opportunities.
Unbelievable.
That's all I want to go for. I think it gets the cross points across.
And look, this is, again, I probably admittedly don't have the greatest tone for this. And I'm just going to just be honest. Like, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. And I feel like, you know, when I see these comments about saying how we're disconnected, I understand. I totally understand. But I'm just here to show our side of the story. And I'm hoping now, just through some of these examples, this is what we see on a daily basis. And hopefully this gives you guys a little bit of something to think about in your own games. Maybe there's a few lenses that you can look at your own situations through. Was I aware of where everyone is? Could I have called this playoff? Should I even be here? What is the win condition? Why am I fighting here? What am I doing here? You know, just to think bigger picture about the game. And so, yeah, I think that really covers majority of the challenges, really.
And again, just demonstrating, just for the consistency, just trying to get people just really, you know, people on the edge or skeptical of us, like, you know, we're choosing these or nitpicking. Mm. That was from a session today. Like, these were the last couple of days. Mm. And, you know, like, when we said we were making this episode, I had nothing prepared. We said that on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Today's Thursday. And I just got...
I said to Nathan, just go to your recent coaching. Just go to your recent VODs.
And like, I have another five here, but I had five. We went over one. We don't need to go any others. But, you know, they just come out. And these, again, consistent that we see across all Emerald players across our coaching sessions.
Yeah, I mean, the it's endless. I mean, it's just the way it is. That's the way the rank system works. a challenger player who goes in Emerald or a Master Tier plays in Emerald will climb out of there because they're not making those errors. But this is the challenge with rank, right? Is that it's when you don't know what you don't know, it's all relative, right? Like when you're in a rank where you're making mistakes, it's like you don't, you know, like the rank system puts you in a place where if it was easy, you wouldn't be there, right? So you're perfectly always in a position where you kind of just don't really know why you're there. And I think that, like, I think a lot of people, you know, they assume that because the mistake isn't immediately obvious, that they're not making a mistake. So if in their eyes, if it's not plainly obvious right in front of their face, then that means they automatically jump to the conclusion that they are playing correctly and they're not making mistakes and this is that they shouldn't be here or whatever. And look, we're not here to say, look, I can't comment on the skill disparity thing. I mean, look, admittedly, I haven't played an Emerald in when I played that rank, there was no Emerald, right? But so I can't comment on that. But all I'm saying from my perspective is that it is gonna take time to get through the rank. And the reason it's gonna take time to get through Emerald is because there are a lot of skills that you need to develop. There's a lot of muscle memory that needs to be developed. There's a lot of habits that need to be developed. Regardless of the matchmaking, whether you're dealing with Emerald 1 players and Emerald 4 players or Gold 1 players, whatever, the reality is that you can develop these skills regardless of the opponents that you're dealing with, whether they're the teammates and opponents. You might verse someone that's better than you, or you might have players on your team that are worse, whatever. There are so many opportunities to learn. And if you keep playing the odds and you keep using all of these games as opportunities to learn and you develop these habits, over time, you'll turn these games that were once impossible to win into, you know, free wins. And we've seen that through those examples. Many of those situations, you know, from their perspective, might have looked like the game was unwinnable, but it's not.
And you'll be shocked. You'll be shocked as well. Like if you, I even have people that got to Masters here and stuff, and they spend a lot of time in Emerald. They clearly realize what was going on. They literally list out you know things. Again, a lot of them will be like play with intensity, like in a champ mastery, like tracking where the enemy jungler is and stuff like that. Like they can break down the skills that they were missing being now Master compared to Emerald.
And it just requires patience. You know, if it was easy, right? If Emerald 2 was easy, then the rank system wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, the rank system would suck and the game would suck.
There has to be very difficult rank, you know, rank tiers that you're going to have to go through.
Yeah, because remember, getting to Emerald 1, guys, again, just going back to the stats.
What's that, top 6%
of the player base? You know,
it's insane.
You know, again, let's say that how many players, ranked accounts were on it, like 1.5 million or whatever. Mm. So, you know, 5-10% of that's 1.5. You know, we're in the top, you know, 70,000 players of 1.5 million players. Like that's, you know.
Yeah. Anything else you want to cover here before we move on to maybe a mailbag?
Nope. I think we had a crack. Let us know if we need to keep going further and further. Because again, like, you know, we're here for the long run, Curtis. We can keep chipping away at this Emerald narrative, exploring this. What does it look like? What are the common mistakes? I think this was a good deep dive.
Yeah. And the reason I'm not getting into all the other stuff, or I don't really feel qualified to get into that stuff about matchmaking, is that I just don't think it's relevant.
No, it's generally just
not relevant. No. It's like, okay, it might be, and I
there
hear
might be
you.
Some unbalanced,
it might be frustrating.
Games.
There could be. There probably is. There probably is some unbalanced matchmaking. It probably is tough, right, in that sense, mentally. But I think that either way, the solution is this, and I think that if you do this, you'll have a much better time, and it might not be as hard as difficult or challenging as you think it might be.
Yeah, and there's different challenges of MMR and matchmaking in every rank as well, right? Like, you know, let's say if you queue on certain times, it's like a challenger player. You know, you might have a challenger bot lane versus
Master. It's a lot harder in Master Plus. If you're complaining in Emerald, wait till you get to Master Plus. It's a lot harder with the matchmaking. I promise you that.
Hmm. All right, mailbag time.
Mailbag.
Away we go. Song. Alrighty then, our first email here comes from Jack. Title of this email is Curiosity During Reviews. We love the word curiosity here, Curtis. It's one of our favorite. It's not just word of the week or word of the month, it's like word of the year, word of the decade.
Yep.
Hello, coach and coach. That's incorrect. I don't go by Coach. My name's just Curtis.
Nathan.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Like literally every episode on its release since week... Oh, wow. Every episode on its release week since episode 2. So he's watched 192 episodes. My name's Jack, and I've been reviewing all of my mid-lane games ever since I joined the MLS 13 months ago. So it's a very long member in your Below Platinum program. And though I've significantly improved upon my mindset and relationship with the game over that span of time, I still encounter a fluctuating level of focus and curiosity heading into my reviews. Just to illustrate, a great review might involve minimizing everything on my computer and pulling up the VOD on insights.gg as soon as my game ends, having a specific moment in my mind from the game that I want to look over and squeeze every bit of learning from it. Going through that sequence 2 to 3 times, then skimming through my early lane and first death or two, looking for any glaring mistakes, but really keeping my main learning objective at the front of my mind. Sounds like a great review process. That's fantastic, right? Skimming, making it quick. He knows what he's looking for. If there's a short sequence that really stands out to me having a high learning value, I'll clip it and post it to the VOD Questions channel of the MLS Discord. On the other hand, a not so great review might look like my game ends and I'm still either excited or frustrated from it. I either waste a lot of time before pulling up the VOD or I start the review too quickly before I've really cooled off from the game and pulled myself into a curious learning mindset. I'll still go through the motions of quality reviewing practice that you guys discussed last episode, focus on the other game, look at first few deaths and pivotal team fights, keep the focus purely on myself, address my learning objective, but can feel like my heart's not really in it. I'm usually pretty aware of this when I close the VOD and I'm not quite satisfied that I had the most effective review. There's less belief in the process and that these reviews are actually making me less likely to repeat those same mistakes. I've noticed that these lower intensity reviews tend to be shorter, not necessarily a bad thing, but it sometimes feels like I rush through it, and this makes it feel like the learning won't stick, and also more likely to happen during win streaks, loss streaks, or particularly long and exciting games, and less likely to happen after I've recently been to coaching or switched my learning objective. My questions are, how can I put myself in a better position to bring a highly curious mindset into every review? Also, is this a common occurrence even among players with a few hundreds of games of reviewing experience? Is it something I should put a lot of effort into addressing, or should I treat it as just a natural part of the improvement journey and accept that, just as with lifting, even these low-quality sessions will make me stronger in the future? Thank you both tremendously for leading the forefront of the development of solo queue coaching and setting a positive example for interacting with League in a healthy manner.
That's a good question. Good question.
I have a classic Nathan Mott response here.
Yeah, Curtis. What's yours?
It's fine. You're not a robot. You're not going to be a hyper efficient every review. You're going to min max. You know, you're going to go into a review. I even do this. I review and I go in. I know I'm emotional. I'm just angry. Like, you know, come on, look at this. And like, I'm angry. And you know, it's you're saying all the right things here, dude. Like, I'm not concerned about, if Jack's being honest here, I'm not concerned about him at all. Completely fine. I love pissing away time. I love having low intensity. I think it's part of the human experience. It's the way I learn. I'm aware of it when it's happening. That's, I guess, the important part. So it doesn't become a habit. As long as you're aware of it, I don't think it'll become a habit. I think you'll be fine.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. I was going to have a very similar response as well. I think that, yeah, just bottom, we're not robots. And then no matter what we say, even if we sat here and said, no, you got to work on it, no, it's going to happen.
It's not realistic.
It's going to happen again. It's so own it, you know. Yep, you're gonna have some it's like you have shitty games, right? You have a shitty block sometimes. You're gonna have some shitty reviews. It's part of the experience. And I think that, yeah, over time, you know, I think that, you know, as long as it's not happening all the time, you know, every now and then it's fine to have a few shitty reviews. I think as you get better at the game and as your game knowledge progresses, you can have like a good shitty review. You know, so like I have them where it's like, okay, I'm not really in the mood to review this. Okay, I'm just going to go over like 2 moments. And like, yes, yeah, like you said, quickly go over them. I still get learning, but it's still a good shitty review. It's something rather than nothing. And I know it's a shitty review in the grand scheme of things, but it's good enough to give me 1 or 2 pieces of learning and then just move on.
There's plenty of games I get no learning. I'm only reviewing purely for the fact so I can just quickly make sense of things.
Yeah.
That's sometimes, and again, I'm not actually learning anything. I'm just making sense purely for the fact so then I am not thinking about that game or like, you know, overanalyzing or letting that game affect my journey, you know? So yep. As long as every game makes sense to me, I'm happy.
Yep. Exactly.
Whether I agree with it or not, or like if my teammates play, you know, a certain way and I wanted to do this and stuff, I'll just be able to move on cleanly, focus on the next game.
Agreed. Don't overcomplicate it, man. You're on the right track.
All right, our next question here comes from Matt. The title of this email is Massive Drop-Off. Hi there, Curtis and Nathan. So this is my situation. Last split, I was around gold 4-ish, which was standard, until I found out the Victoria skin was going to be for Trinimir, one of my most played champions in the mid lane, so I decided to commit 3 to 6 games a day in 1 to 2 blocks, and in 1 week, I went straight to Platinum 4 for the extra chroma. I was happy. Then, next split comes around, this one, and I very quickly climb back to Platinum. I keep the 3-block process, and I climb all the way to Platinum 2. Then something just didn't click anymore. I start losing over and over again. I start demoting over and over again. I start developing these toxic narratives. I keep losing and losing. Long story short, I'm now at Silver 1-0 LP. So we're talking about a 700-ish LP drop, which just sounds massive in my head. I know intuitively that there's no way my skill dropped from plat level all the way to silver level. Like, there's no way. I went to Tim Mysterious, and his advice was that it's probably stage 4 issues. The problem is that I'm being unable to identify them. I decided to take a 1 week break from the game, see how that makes me feel, but I keep getting the urge to play and the anxiety of getting plus 15, minus 33 LP, and how I'm going to pick my account back up. It's been 5 days and I haven't played, but I really don't know what to do from this now. I don't know how to approach the situation. Any advice or insight will be greatly appreciated, of course.
I think Tim was spot on with the break, though. I think that's a really good idea. Step one is you've got to take a break. I think it's really good advice.
God, I love this, though. This is... Okay, first things first, Matt, fixing this account is the only thing you're going to do. You're not going to make a new account. This is part of the solo queue journey, the process. I love this. I love the situation you're in. It's so exciting. So now you need to completely, I actually want you to accept that you're just like a silver 1, gold 4 level player. Really hard to do. And take it one game at a time, one decision at a time. Really just break it down in steps. And again, you're not into the mindset of like you're a gambler trying to get back the money you lost. You're just, again, accepting your level play. And when you actually switch your mindset to that, you'll be surprised how quickly you climb. I feel like I shouldn't tell you that, but like that's the reality that I've found, because this has happened to me many a times. I've fixed accounts, and when I break it down and go back to the basics, everything comes together really nicely.
I think that's really good advice.
And again, like, you know, saying that you're silver 1, gold 4 player, like, you have to accept it. You're probably not, but like, getting to that mindset is healthy. And again, that's why I think you'll rock it back up pretty quickly if you can really embrace this. Because the reality is right now, if you're losing all those games, you are actually a silver 1, gold 4. But that's because of stage 4 issues.
Yeah, and I think trying to understand why that drop happened in the first place isn't even overly important, believe it or not. Like, I could sit here and I could probably explain some reasons as to why that might have happened, but I don't think it's important. I think you should really just go on to Nathan's method, you know, for the sake of this journey, accept that you're a silver 1 goalful player, take it one game at a time. I think that's really pragmatic advice. Just at a high level, though, what I would say is that, you know, what usually happens is that you probably had poor fundamentals in the first place, which makes you a little bit more exposed to being, you know, fluctuating LP. You plateaued at Platinum 2. You peaked at Platinum 2, sorry. You probably weren't a Platinum 2, but you probably peaked. So the way I view it, right, let's say you were actually in reality a Platinum 4 player. You had a few games that went your way. Maybe you were playing super high confidence. You peaked Platinum 2, but you're in Platinum 4 player. If you're a Platinum 4 player and that's the middle of your bell curve, right, or your fluctuation of your LP range, that means you could easily go plus minus 250-ish. So maybe on the bottom end of your bell curve, you were maybe what, like a gold 2, gold 3, 50 LP, right, player at the bottom end, plat 2 at the highest end. So you've got this very wide bell curve, right, in terms of your fluctuation of your LP. Then what happens, all it takes is a few games where you've lost your confidence, you're overcomplicating things, you're really thinking about the losses, you're focusing on the LP, not the learning, you're not expressing your best self, you're not present. And then that's not much difference. Think about it, you're already at gold 3, you only have to lose a few more games, you're gold 4, silver 1. So in my mind, it's not, even though it sounds extreme, in reality, it's actually not if you kind of view it through that lens. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a rough overview as to what kind of
happened. You chuck your like 200 LP of tilting in there.
Yep, exactly.
It adds up.
So I wouldn't really overcomplicate it. Like Nathan said, get into the details, take it one game at a time, and use this as an opportunity to build your mental resilience. Use it as an opportunity to build your process and fundamentals and matchup understanding, and really do it properly.
All right, our next question here comes from Dwight. The title of his email is "The Realization of the Reality That He's Getting Better at League." Hello, Curtis and Nathan. I've been following your podcast for a fair bit now. As I've been listening to your podcast and implementing some of the things you suggest to get better at the game, I've been steadily improving. However, it's becoming more and more apparent as to how much time it actually takes to get better, especially if you're not particularly talented. I started playing League casually around 3 years ago and started really seeing improvement around a few months ago as I've been playing it more, finally climbing out of iron and into bronze, though I hardly play ranked. If I keep at it for long enough, I have no doubt I could become a great player, but since I've just turned 18 and gotten a job, my free time has become much more limited than it originally was, and I find myself wanting to develop more tangible skills like playing an instrument and learning how to draw. I still like League and will probably continue to play it off and on for fun, but I don't think I will have the time to dedicate to actual improvement if I want to learn other things. I wonder if you've been in a similar situation. If so, what made you choose League over other things, or did you just manage to make more time? And his OPGG is, yeah, bronze 4, and he's 22 games this season.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think what a very mature email for an 18-year-old. I think you're spot on. You know, life is about choices. It's about sacrifices. You can't do everything. If you want to play an instrument and learn how to draw, the reality is that you're probably not going to be able to play League, you know, that much League. And so I think that it's all about, yeah, making decisions in accordance to what makes you feel the most satisfied. In regards to, again, we can go one at a time. At least for me, it wasn't really, League was just the thing that excited me the most. It was the hobby that I wanted to play. I didn't really think about it. It was like, yeah, I could be doing other things, I guess, but like, it was a non-negotiable. I had so much fun playing League. There was no, but I could be doing that. That just wasn't part of the equation for me.
It's personally. Like there's nothing else I wanted to
there
do.
There was nothing else I wanted to do.
Get better at this game because it's so fun. It's so challenging. It's got a huge community around it. Awesome community. Like especially us trying to pursue as pro players as well.
At that time, I didn't even think about the community though. I just thought about...
Yeah, though it wasn't. I wasn't about the community.
Though. I was like, just... I think... I'm going to get high rank and be really good.
No, for me, it was a bit of the community because I followed... Yeah. I followed like the early days of the esports, like right. Skara and like, you know, Dyrus and like the TSM, like IPL 4 I remember watching, right? And that was cool. Like this league scene's awesome. Like the personalities were cool and NA and stuff. I was like, I want to be a part of this, right? So I want to be a pro player. But I mean, that was like one aspect of it. I did love the game. No, I mean, I definitely, when I decided League, I said I was going to be a pro player in this game. That was my intention from the get-go because I was high level in other games. So I'm like, it just makes sense. I'm going to see how far I can take it with this game. That actually was my intention.
Yeah, you were. You always wanted to be a pro player.
But you weren't. That was sort of just came.
I just liked being really good at games. That was just my thing. I just thought that was my identity. Being really good at every game I played.
Yeah.
So I just feel like it was the game I played. And if I play this game, I'm going to be the best. And anything less than that, I would be disappointed. So I don't know. I didn't really think of it like that. But now that I'm older, again, speaking from the perspective now, yeah, I would love to spend time drawing. I would love to learn piano and I would love to do these other things, but you've got to and read books and do all this crazy stuff. Like I would love to. But again, you know, the way I'm viewing it right now in my life is that I'm loving League. It's my career. It's something that I enjoy doing. And it's not like drawing's going to go anywhere. It's not like piano's going to go anywhere. I can do these things later in my life. So just from a personal experience, for me, I'm all in on League. And then, yeah, maybe later on in when I'm like 50 or some shit, I don't know, then I can pick up drawing. But again, for me, it's not really a priority. It's not going anywhere. So yeah, it's all about where you're at in your life and what do you feel makes you the most satisfied.
One thing I will mention here, you know, if you enjoy the game, I don't think you've actually given it a crack properly, like ranked. Like maybe you haven't really gone down this hobby enough that maybe you really like it. It could be fulfilling in your life because we do think League can be great.
Can be. I wouldn't force it though.
You mean, not force it for sure, but like, you know, Yeah, you know, I like, you know, he mentioned, because he says here, he says he's realized how much it takes time to get the better of the game. I've had many successful students, like Ishan, for example. My, it's on the, I think it's one of my pinned channels, my YouTube video. 3 games a day, full time job. He's a software engineer, all that sort of stuff. And he was able to climb from gold to master tier. You know, 3, like, people, I think that the message I'm trying to get across is that if you have a long, if you're consistent with the process of even 3 games a day, you'll be surprised how fun and how you can actually climb to improve. People sometimes, I think, are a little bit confused about the time that actually
there's,
takes.
There's a bunch of people in my program that have wife and kids. Yeah. They're like diamond.
Yeah.
Which is pretty remarkable.
You know, you're 18. So, like, you know, I've... You might be confused about the actual time. Maybe. You know, given again that he hasn't actually given it a crack.
There's a lot for him to have a think about, really.
Yeah. All right, our last one for today comes from Lena from Denmark. The title of this email is Review, Realization, and Breakthrough. Hey, Curtis and Nathan, going to say right now that this isn't a question, but more of a recent observation about reviewing that felt like a breakthrough. We love people sharing their experiences so they can maybe help other people, especially when I see breakthrough in the title of the email. I realize that I very often end up with a lot of gold having missed some kind of reset opportunity, and I almost felt lucky to have noticed it as I saw it while in game. In 5 games in a row, I had too much gold in my inventory, 1500 gold plus, during laning phase after my first reset, so I went back into some of my older VODs and found the same mistake there. It seemed like I'm too scared to miss last hits and plant in on Azir. So when I don't have TP up, I struggle to let go, not planting platins, mass last hits and platins on Azir. So when I don't have TP up, I struggle to let go of the lane and often end up dying or being useless because of it. After that, I started the laning phases in the 5 games I noticed my mistakes in detail, trying to find out when I could have gotten a reset, but I couldn't find any. So I turned to MLS and asked everyone what their thoughts were. After a long, thoughtful discussion, we ended up at the idea of just trying to send the resets and see what happens and review them, which I then added to my 2-week challenge. And I plan on keeping that there for a while. I'm going into this part of my journey pretty much only knowing that resetting on a cannon wave is good and that I often fall into the trap of shoving before resetting. The reason this is such a breakthrough is because it made me realize how much I've been reviewing some of my games wrong in a way. I couldn't just go into a VOD and look for it without focusing on it in game first, the same way I could with some other things such as misuse abilities. It might seem like a really small thing for some, but it completely changed my view of improvement because it made me realize just how much intention matters while playing. I was aware of the idea of playing with intention prior, but after this, it really settled in. Just wanted to share my little review breakthrough. And as always, thanks you guys for the amazing podcast and coaching programs.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I love this email because even though for a lot of people listening, they might think, oh, yeah, that's kind of obvious, isn't it? But no, you know, for a lot of people, kind of being intentional with a game in general is just foreign. It's just not something they're used to. They're used to kind of switching off or playing it very kind of, casually, if you will.
Especially if you haven't come from a competitive game in the past.
100%. And I think it's awesome to make that first connection. It's like, wow, I saw this as kind of like a problem, and then I saw it in the review, and now I've got a solution, and now that's changing my gameplay. And like, to complete that whole cycle, like, just once, like, that's awesome. It's like, wow, this is just one thing I never was doing before. Now I'm doing it, and it feels much better.
This is why, with anything, you've got to do it. You can't just sit there and be theoretical, because again, you could know that, you know, it's like, you could see anyone, I'm on a lot of gold, it's, you know, and I've heard that, like, it's not good to stand on a lot of gold, but until you feel it and actually execute and improve on it, that's the fun part about League. And that's 100%. Until you do it, the learnings actually don't properly sink in. That's why you got to get a lot of games in and practice and be intentional with everything. Otherwise, you will not improve.
And you really got to count your wins. Like, that's a huge win. You should be really proud of yourself. Like, the fact that you've gone through that process, you've executed, you've identified it, you've done the whole thing. Give yourself a pat in the back. That's awesome. And absolutely, now it's just a matter of now identifying the next thing and then solving it and then moving on. It's just rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. You're on the right track, Lena.
All right. That's it for today's episode then, everyone.
Beautiful.
Good work. Keep on improving, especially in Emerald Tier. We'll see you guys next week.